Welcome to season two of Waking Up Goliath, which includes highlights of the interviews that I did when working on my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. These interviews were conducted in fall 2022, but I gleaned so much from them that I want to continue to share them as an accompaniment to the book, a way to track down where so many of those great quotes from the book came from. One of the things that I want you to know, however, is that life has continued to go on for all the people I spoke with. Many have changed jobs, been elected to new roles, launched new ventures, or experienced other radical shifts in their own lives. Laura Kelly Fanucci, who you'll meet today, is certainly one of those people whose life has continued to take wild curves since I interviewed her, as her social media followers will surely know. Laura Kelly Fanucci is a powerful writer, speaker, and retreat leader. Yet at this point, she's probably most well known as the convener of MotheringSpirit.com, an ecumenical gathering space for those interested in the spirituality of parenting. While online conversation on social media is often perceived as shallow, Laura is known for going deep, speaking to painful human realities like the loss of children and cancer. She never avoids tough topics, but writes from the crucible of living in the midst of grief and illness. She invites others to be honest about the realities of their life as well. While the label of influencer makes her nervous, as you'll hear in this interview, she's someone who's very conscientious about the way she exercises her influence. And when I write in Redeeming Power, Chapter 11, about people whose power is sourced in authenticity and integrity, Laura is definitely one of those people I have in mind. Her thoughtfulness in this interview models the kind of thoughtfulness and intentionality I encountered when meeting many of the people who you'll be introduced to in this coming season. In the past, as you know, I've worked a lot with people who are in church leadership, and I've interpreted them in the past largely with administrators, people who are running stuff. But I'm recognizing like more and more of church leadership is being exercised online and outside of the regular venues that people have imagined, you know, like it's not like just parish or principles or something like that. A lot of church leadership is happening through social media, independent like retreats, circles of people who are getting together. So maybe as a way of starting, if you don't mind just saying a little bit about what your work is right now, like how are you exercising leadership in the church before we begin to ask about like the spirit with which it's done?
So I am currently a self-employed writer, speaker, and retreat leader. And I am now recognizing that part of my little intro blurb, I do say I'm the founder of MotheringSpirit.com, which is this online ecumenical collaborative gathering place around parenting and spirituality. So my work is largely based online these days, which feels so funny. I mean, that's not what I sought out to do. It's not what I feel like I went, you know, to graduate school to do or like, but this is, like you said, this is this new space in which we are being and doing church and people are connecting. Like it's a new public sphere. So what's that like to show up as, you know, a religious and spiritual person? So I write a lot. I write, you know, I do freelance work. I'm a columnist for Catholic News Service. I do a lot of my own writing on social media, so on Instagram and Facebook, and I have a pretty big following of folks there. I do a lot of like, I mean, I also write traditional like print books, and I go out and do speaking in the ways that we're used to it in church. Like I go lead retreats in churches, or I go speak to parents groups. Now with Mothering Spirit, like being the one who's creating the space, building and widening the table and inviting other writers to write essays and prayers around parenting and spirituality in a place that I created many years ago and now want to transform into something new. So yeah, it is really kind of wild to think how much of my work is online.
Well, and technically you're not really working for anybody in that sense, you know, but you're working for a sense of a larger mission. Yeah. I think a lot of times as we talk about power, people associate it with a set role. Like I've been given authority to do this role, but you're, I don't even know if you resonate if I say that I see you as a person of power.
if that even like that language even like, I just, that's not even in my reference point, or you do see yourself, but like, it's not the ordinary kinds of power, right? So like, where does that power come from for you?
This was a great question. And I appreciated the ways that you're inviting me to think about that, because a couple different things rose up for me. I've realized that, you know, I often hear from people who follow my work on social media that I think it's that piece that you named around religious authenticity that resonates with people. Like, I have been someone who has written very publicly through some really big grief in my life. And that is something that people in, well, similar kinds of grief, but also just grief in general, have been attracted to my work because they see something that they name as authentic to their own experience in that. And so I've realized in some way there's a piece of that, like, that's sort of symbolic power, symbolic leadership. Like, here's someone who's naming things that maybe haven't been named by other people in authority. And that feels affirming and empowering to me. There's a weird power imbalance on social media too, where someone like me who does share, you know, reflections about my own spirituality, about my family, my identity as, you know, in the different callings I have, people identify with that so strongly that they think they know me. They think they know me personally. And so it becomes a very strange thing where like they know a lot about me and I know nothing about them. So there's a piece of like aspirational kind of like power or leadership. It's funny because there's a piece of my work that I can see, like, I worked hard at this. I worked hard at it from a like grad school theology, that whole piece of it, or I worked really hard on the craft of writing, or I've worked hard on my public speaking skills over the years. Like, that I've worked hard on, I have grown in confidence around it. Like, I feel comfortable in my power around that. Getting comfortable with that power, I think, was a matter of like age and maturity, just like coming into my own. But this piece of like social media and influence, which is where people often know my work, that is like something that feels like it happened to me. And in many ways it has. Like, I wrote this poem at the beginning of the pandemic in March 2020, the first couple of weeks, and it went viral, like totally viral. Like, it was crazy. And went around the world and all these people translated it, and it was on TV and it was all these things. So I got like overnight thousands and thousands of followers. And it was both great, because what writer doesn't want people to read their words, and also bewildering, because then it's sort of like, do you even know what my work is? Like, do you even care what I'm actually about? I don't just do stuff like that every day. Like, what is this very strange world? So I really have had the experience that like that piece of power and influence just came to me overnight. And I know how quickly it can come, and I know how quickly it can go. Because then as soon as I started speaking up and writing things about the pandemic, or like after George Floyd was murdered, people go as fast as they came. So I have learned to hold that really loosely. I also just think anything on this could disappear overnight. If they decide they want to stop making this app, then like the thousands of followers I have are no longer there, no longer connected to my work. So like, it's a dynamic in which I'm trying to learn how to steward it well, like what I have, to use it wisely and prudently and at the service of others, and also hold it loosely enough that I can just say like, it could be gone tomorrow. It can't be determinative of my life or identity or work. It's just not something that I feel solid in, like I do in the, oh yeah, I have become a better writer over the years. Like, I really worked at that, you know? This is just, yeah, it's very strange.
How do you manage that? Like, what do you draw on as a resource for yourself to stay healthy in the middle of this kind of zaniness of power? Like, are there stories you draw on? Are there models that you've got?
One of the things that was most influential for me, that's a funny word to use in this conversation, but in my work at Collegeville, a couple of the theologians I got to work with, two of them were New Testament scholars that worked together and had this really, they have this amazing vocational ministry in Texas, these two Episcopal priests. And based on their deep study of the New Testament and Pauline letters, this is John Lewis and Jane Patterson, they once shared in one of our meetings at Collegeville that they felt like you could translate the Greek word charism in the sense of being the power of God moving through you for the sake of the community. And they were trying to get the idea that it's active, it's on the go, it has a life and agency of its own. So we often think of charism as like a physical thing that's given to us as a gift. But they were saying, no, it's the sense of it's the power of God moving through you for the sake of the community. So they were also saying, you know, sometimes there are callings and charisms that we have for a time. It's not something you necessarily like have all lifelong. Sometimes that power of God then moves out elsewhere. And that, I loved that definition. I feel like that broke open what I thought about charism and calling and power. And when I think about my work, I know that the best and the truest work that I do is when I'm trying to be a channel, like when I'm trying to clear out my own junk so that whatever that power of God is can move through me to others. So I think I can feel now when I have something to write or say that feels like it's coming from that deep wellspring of truth and like that abiding presence with God. And I feel like sometimes it'll just come out of nowhere and I'm like, ooh, I got to write that down because that didn't come from me. And I can feel the times where I'm like, I want to say something today. I think I need the dopamine hits of some likes, or I would really like to write something that goes viral, or just like the panic of I haven't written anything in a while. Like, is anybody still listening? Does anybody care? Do I still have it? Anytime I try to do anything out of that place, this isn't to say I don't still do it. I definitely still do it because human pride, ego, all that. But I know now it's actually like a waste of my time and I can feel myself starting to do it. And I'm like, oh no, there's nothing there right now. It's better to just stop and just do some other work, because if it's not there, like I can feel how I need to like reconnect with the spirit within. And that's the only kind of authentic work that comes out. I feel like you're helping me to name that in some ways I've wanted to use my power, like both in terms of the gifts I have for writing and speaking and the like influence of audiences, like people, I'm like not here to share stupid memes on social media. Like I am the person you're going to be like, woo, she just went to 30,000 feet on that. Yeah. I don't have time for like, I just want to talk about these things that matter most, you know?
Okay. So step back now to the 30,000 feet. So when we've been talking about power, what's actually your definition of power? Like, what have we been talking about?
Yeah. Okay. I loved thinking about this as like the compare and contrast with influence, because influence is a word that is so like, I have a visceral reaction. I always feel myself do this. And yet I literally have like a folder on my desktop that's like influencer contracts for 2022. So it is a word I actually use, but I don't like. And so what's the difference between power and influence? I was thinking about, and I was thinking power feels like an ability or an opportunity. Like there's a groundedness in power that feels solid and secure. And influence feels like it's got an agenda. Influence to me feels like there's a pressure behind it. That's like, I want to influence you to do something where I could just be resting in my own power. And I look at people in my life that I think have a very strong sense of self and mission. And I think they're so like grounded in their sense of self. Like that's a true manifestation of power. But influence always feels like, ugh. Like I'm working with Catholic Relief Services right now to develop something that's literally going to be a network of Catholic influencers trying to fundraise for them. And I keep being like, we can't call it influencers. And they keep saying to me, but we're working with influencers. I'm like, I don't want to use the word. I could call them leaders. I hate this. I think it's problematic. Like, all right, well, see attached file that's entitled influencers. So I think I fall back on that definition that John and Jane gave me so many years ago, that like the power is about the strength and force and ability that comes from God moving through you. I think I can define power as something that's given and has to be stewarded well on behalf of others, that it is an ability to act on behalf of others, to care for others, to lift up others, and to affect some change in the world. Could be for better, could be for worse. Yeah, but it there's a solidity to power, I think, that I don't feel in the word influence. And I've realized too, like, what feels false about social media work is often that the quote unquote power that, so like an organization or even like archdiocese have hired me to do stuff as an influencer. And they're only coming to me for my platform. They only want the eyeballs that are going to see this. It's pure like advertising and marketing to them. And so I have done it because I need to pay my bills and because I have this. And it does feel like, well, yeah, this is a great book. I would have shared it anyway. In fact, you want to pay me to share it? Perfect. You know, like, that's great. But sometimes I'll be called upon to like do a consultation with some church or organization or something that genuinely wants to know, hey, based on your experience in ministry, in working with parents, in writing about grief, like, we'd love to hear you speak from that and help guide us in this work. And that feels like a genuine expression of power. That says, that has to do with like both what I've received and what I've cultivated, and to say, this is like, this can be offered from myself to you. And it feels reciprocal too, you know, versus just like, oh, this app hired me to like use my platform. It doesn't feel like power.
That's fascinating. Part of the reason why I like asking this question is each person I've interviewed, they respond to it in different ways. I interviewed a Jewish leader this morning who absolutely refused to identify with the word power because he only saw it as oppressive and corruptive, but was very comfortable identifying as a person of influence.
That's so
bad. Felt to him like it was soft and non-manipulative and non-violent. And so some people identify the word power even with immediately with the concept of violence.
Wow, that's so fascinating.
Isn't that interesting?
I think it comes from growth. For me, I'm realizing, I think there's a piece of it like growing into my identity, like as a woman, as a feminist, like especially learning from Black and Brown leaders, writers, speakers who are very determined to like claim their power and their voice, and they want to use that language of power and they want to use it well. That has helped me a lot. You're helping me to see that. I don't know if I would have had the same answer to that question like 5 or 10 years ago even. But there's something about like, because it is that piece of the interconnectedness. Because if I don't name and claim my power, then what does that say to other people too? Like, is it something to be dismissed? Or like, am I saying none of us are worthy of it? Like, I want to steward mine well because you damn well deserve yours. And like, I want to help you be that grounded, strong force in the world.
One way that I'm thinking about power, but I'm having a hard time crystallizing it for myself, is that in some ways, it's the mystery of whatever it is that magnifies the impact of our actions. It's not the actions themselves.
Yes.
I could say to the president, you're fired. And it's the same words. But if I say that versus, well, I guess nobody can say that to the president exactly. But like, if I say to my husband, you're fired.
Yeah.
That has, you know, it has all the effect of a butterfly wing, you know, but if his boss says that, that has impact, right? You know, I just like, there's spheres in which my words have a lot of impact, and there's spheres in which my words are like shouting into a tornado that get, you know, and so it's kind of the mystery. There's a lot of different sources of what make things have impact in some circumstances and not, but that all of us need spheres in which we also don't have impact.
Yes. There's something too about the relationship between like the individual and the collective. Like where are there truer or fuller expressions of power? Is it just with the individual like wielding that power? Or I don't know, you look at like collective uprisings, like what's going on right now in Iran? Like where is there this sense of like, it's again, it's that amplification, right? You're like how the collective rises up to claim its power, to use its power. That's really interesting too, because where are the limits of whatever power or influence we have as individuals versus like either sharing that in collaborative ways or realizing it's all relativized by what happens when the collective, you know?
Well, and even even as I was walking today, I was thinking about, is the voice that Christianity has to contribute to the world on this. Does Trinity, the fundamental Trinitarian nature of our understanding of God, like God and God's very being in some ways is a collective.
Yes.
Should that be shaping the way that we particularly exercise power in the world?
Wow. Yes. I'm thinking right now about a professor I had, a monk from St. John's, who used to talk all the time about how American Christianity was so Christomonas, like it was so me and Jesus, you know, that very evangelical. So that is a really interesting dynamic around. Have you read Jesus and John Wayne? I haven't read that yet. Mm-hmm. You should definitely look into that. There's some really interesting books that are coming out right now around like Christianity and sort of celebrity culture. And I mean, these perversions of power, but also, yeah, what are these cultural narratives that get folded into it? Like if it's just, if me and Jesus is my primary concept of the divine, that's so different from the Trinity, like that community in one, that like ongoing dance of the Trinity, that's going to give me a really different relationship to power than just like, hey, if it's just me and Jesus, like Jesus gives it to me, I get to model myself on that, savior of the world, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, here's this dance of these three beings pouring themselves out in love, like receiving, giving. This is the creative force that set the universe to spin.
Well, and that's what you're trying to do with Mothering Spirit right now, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're trying to bring others into the dance to spin.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a lot of work, but also so good to be dismantling. I keep picturing, like, I've been thinking that the language of platform is so interesting that we've used this very physical word to describe these virtual spaces. And I've been thinking about what's it like to dismantle a platform? And I feel like that is the work of what I'm doing. Like there was all this language after George Floyd was murdered on social media around like pass the mic, you know, it was all these like white influencers would give their account over to black influencers for the day. And I was thinking, okay, so sharing the mic, we use that language, but I was also thinking like, I have this picture of us dismantling this platform board by board and like passing the wood down this big line and we get to make something else with it. And again, like it's a lot of work to take something apart. I don't even yet have a vision of what this thing is that we're building, but I like that we're dismantling some things. And I like that we want to build something different together and it's going to be long work, but I like where it's going. I really like plying these boards off this platform.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you would like more information on the book, or you're interested in hearing from others I interviewed, please go to my website, angarito.com. I want to also encourage you to visit the site Laura references so often in this podcast, motheringspirit.com. Here you will be able to read essays from some of the many women whose voices have found a platform here, including Laura's. Meanwhile, know I'm praying for you as this week you immerse yourself in the craziness of life and try to be the leader that God has called you to be in the world.